Top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
You will die, only to live again in a younger body. Then you can tell me if the operation was a success. I could easily kill you now, but I'm determined to have your brain.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of genre cinema. Hi, my name is Chris, and along with Jeff, we talk about movies that aren't really awful at all. Horror, action, kung fu, musicals, post-apocalyptic, women in prison films, and much, much more. From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 290, Midsommar.
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 Midsommar Night's Dream,
yep.
With Puck and etc. It's been a long time since I've read that one. Sweden.
We're recording this in, I would say, midwinter.
Yeah, exactly.
Midwinter, if there's such a thing. You look outside.
It's cold enough to freeze the balls off a brass monkey. Whatever that means.
But that's okay, because midwinter goes away, followed by spring.
Mid-spring.
And then ultimately get midsummer, which is arguably the best time of the year.
It is. It is.
Is this one of the best horror films of the year? We'll discuss that soon.
Ooh, tough to say. Interesting. This is Ari Aster who brought us strong Hereditary.
In the respective year it was released. I don't recall exactly what year Hereditary was released. Do you recall?
I think 2018. Yeah.
It was one of the better horrors of the year. A lot of people derided because it kind of went a bit weird and culty near the end, which, spoiler alert, this one sort of does too. But
yeah.
This one you could see coming a mile away. That one seemed almost shoehorned in. But that was an incredible movie in the sense that it was a really, really incisive portrait of grief and what it feels like to lose a loved one. And yes, I mean, maybe, I don't know, maybe you didn't even need the supernatural elements in that one.
I would have said exactly the same. Just have the family dissolution happen in front of you, and the arguments and the
like
amazing...
Toni Collette's performance was just unbelievable. Like, it cut me to the bone when she's wailing and wailing after she realizes what, you know, when it all settles in after the funeral, when she loses her daughter. Again, I guess we're talking about plot points in a movie that came out a couple years ago. I thought at the time, and I've lamented this on the podcast many a time, that she should have been nominated for Best Actress at that year's Oscars. But of course, horror films rarely get looked at
through that lens by
Academy voters, so she was overlooked. But great film. This is his follow-up. This one is a foray, whereas that one was sort of more of a family picture. This one is a foray into folk horror.
Oh boy, yeah. And I was thinking too, because there was a movie that features a bunch of hitchhikers going in to Sweden and getting lost, and that was
and
a
find their way into the galaxy.
appropriate
guide, right?
Yes, that was cited by Kirk Hammett as one of his favorites of the year.
The Ritual. The Ritual, of course. And we did the podcast on that one.
I believe we did, and it's interesting how that one also featured the wilds of Sweden and also something, a moment of grief that galvanized a group of friends to go out and go on a rather unorthodox vacation.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I mean, I do like folk horror a lot. And when you talk about folk horror, you have to go right back to, not the originator, but one of the exemplars of the genre, the Wicker Man.
Of course, yeah.
And it's hard to define what folk horror is, but oftentimes you have these populaces that are, or populize, I don't know what the, that are isolated from the rest of the civilized world. They're sort of archaic in the way they live. They participate in rituals and so on. And then you have, you always have the outsider coming in, you know, the insider-outsider dynamic, and looking at life and going, whoa, what's going on here? And then on the other hand, you have the insiders looking at the outsiders with distrust and sort of, distrust and looking at them and saying, like, what are they doing here? Are they going to upset the, apple cart, et cetera, et cetera? We've been here all these years doing what we do. In some cases, they're lured to the area. In other cases, they just happen upon them. In this one, we're not going to say what's what.
Yeah.
But the thing with folk horror is that at the end of the day, or at the end of the film, you always know the weird shit is going to go down. And that the intruders, the interlopers, are always going to get what's coming to them. There's never been a folk horror, that I've seen at least, where the outsiders
get the better of
prevail. No.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking, I guess the subtle distinction, because you could throw The Hills Have Eyes into that maybe, but there should probably be...
It doesn't
be,
have the archaic element to it.
Yeah, it should have like some ritualistic pagan, and yeah. ritual gives and, the, gives the, and this away in the very title.
And that's another thing too, you don't need to have the outside or inside dynamic either, because the witch is cited as a recent folk horror.
Uh-huh.
Robert Eggers' The Witch, even though it's just a period piece, so is a folk horror now a period piece?
Ooh, what that at up. Least the witch was infused with the kind of Anabaptist, Lutheran, heavy-duty, yeah. Protestant dynamic of these people, Mayflower types, who come to America and establish. So that was heavily infused with religion. So I guess I'm negating my own point of the Hills Have Eyes is not that, I guess.
No, it's not folklore.
Yeah.
It's horror for folks, but it's not folklore.
Or maybe Texas Chainsaw even, but they eschew that dynamic too.
These are more inside or outsider movies that don't have the folklore element to it. More sort of, in some cases, you can almost argue that they're exploitation in a sense. Although in the case of Hills Have Eyes, they're mutated Hicks, and in the case of Texas Massacre, they're cannibals.
Yeah, for sure.
But you know, it's not. I mean, I was reading a list today of some of the best folk horrors. They put Vincent Price's, well, he didn't direct it, but he starred in it, Witchfinder General, which again is more like The Witch, it's a strict period piece. Number one on the list is what I consider to be one of my favorite films in the genre, and that being Ben Wheatley's Kill List.
Ooh.
And I don't want to say too much about that movie because it's a movie that would be, I think, destroyed with spoilers and so on. So, yeah, folk horror has been definitely... And of course, before that, there was the Wicker Man remake that came out a decade ago.
Which you've cited so often.
Which I love. I absolutely adore it. Yeah. For all the wrong reasons.
Yeah, exactly.
I love Nicolas Cage in the bear suit. I love just a wackadoodle movie. And it's just... Not that the original Wicker Man isn't wackadoodle with some of those songs and dancing around the Mayflower. And
yeah. Well, both bears and Mayflowers. Yeah, Maypoles here. Sorry. Yeah. But play a prominent fixture here, and it's pretty funny that...
I just keep thinking Stairway to Heaven in my head.
You know, oh, yeah.
The May Queen. And
yeah, exactly.
And
it's just funny here that we've talked about the most popular profession in all of horror, as opposed to the most popular profession in North America, which is the truck driver. Hundreds of thousands of people are truck drivers. This would be, of course...
Popular or populous?
Popular.
Like
popular.
People actually enjoy doing it?
I just mean in sheer numbers.
Okay, that's what
popular,
I mean. Popular. So
like but most, in horror, yeah. The disproportionate number of... And who knew this was such a thing?
Grad students.
Anthropologists. Yeah, it doesn't matter. They span genres. The Italian cannibal genre, they're so ubiquitous of these guys with a notepad, typically guys, but with sometimes female assistants, go into the deep...
Even in Indonesian sci-fi ripoffs.
Oh,
like
of
Lady
course.
Terminator, she's an anthropologist, which she says like 19 times in the movie.
And so, these guys, despite their bona fides...
Have you ever met an anthropologist?
Like,
are they out there? If they're so populous in horror films, do they exist?
Okay. Yes, I went on a date with an anthropologist.
Well, it must have been a memorable date, because, you know...
I don't know the exact type, but she studies bones for police investigations.
Her name is Bones, and she was
Bones,
on the
yes.
show. No?
And yes, was it Zooey Deschanel's sister?
Emily.
Show, but... Yeah, like so not one of these people who digs through old bones, but more in recent vintage for the likes of Law & Order, SVU, that kind of thing.
I prefer old bones, actually.
I'm full of old bones.
Just to get these old bones out of bed in the morning is hard enough.
And this is the crew that comprises the group that sets off to Sweden for their weird vacation. And we should say what sets them off. Mm-hmm. Because in the ritual is the death of a friend in a knifing incident in a 7-Eleven or whatever. This one, there's a serious, serious murder-suicide that affects the main character, and it's her sibling and her parents who are the victims of this thing. And, whoa, I was on board with that. I questioned my partner and said, can you really gas a house with a car in the way people commit suicide with CO2?
I think you would have needed
the entire fleet of Formula One racers to do this, but they actually had some sort of tape, duct tape, to tape down the doors to let any oxygen, prevent the escape of any oxygen. I thought, man, when I saw the parents lying there, holy crap. Yeah. I said, I don't know if this is possible physically to do this. I think it's a little wonky, but man, I was on board with that and going, I don't care, I'm buying it. Critical faculties aside, I'm like, man, if this is a check that the director can cash later on, what a whiz-bang way to start a movie.
Yeah, and then that shades of Hereditary once again. I mean, somebody dealing with the grief of well, in this case, loved ones, parent and sisters.
And that came out of nowhere, too.
And, yeah, so she basically goes as a distraction, but she really wasn't supposed to go in the first place.
Yeah, and this would be, I guess, Florence Pugh, who's like quite a good actress.
She's a very good actress.
She was from the UK, but yeah. Her accent was just bang on.
Yeah, her character's name again was Danny. Yeah, she was in, there was a series called Little Drummer Boy based on the novels, John Le Carré, and she played a character by the name of Charlie, and that's like the first time I sort of took note of her, and then I watched that movie Fighting With My Family, which is like a biopic of WWE wrestler Paige, and she's like Paige.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean,
what an obscure thing.
It was fun. It was
like,
whatever. It was
every grappler get a biopic? Like, of all people, like...
Well, hey. Yeah. You know, she fought with her family. I know she gets a biopic, but...
I guess.
She was good. The movie would have probably suffered without her. She's very charming.
Oh, for sure. And she sort of wills herself into this group of anthropologists to come along because
She's dating one of them.
She's dating one of them, and rightly, they don't invite her along because they just figure...
It's going to be a boys' trip.
A boys' trip, plus she's not far enough removed from her grieving period to really be on board with the kind of hijinks that would be, like this kind of laddish outing.
Yeah.
So, to the extent that it is, because they're invited by one of their colleagues to join him and meet his family in this small Swedish town. And he shows them pictures, and I thought this was kind of a telegraph. He shows them pictures of his family, and he calls it a commune. And they're bedecked in flowing white robes, a la the indie rock band Polyphonic Spree.
Where I was thinking, like, I haven't thought of those guys in years. Yeah. That's funny. Yes.
Yeah. And maybe the Waco compound guys referenced in the movie.
Yep.
And I was thinking, okay, small town, remote town. It's not even a town. It's the town to the extent Waco is a town. The compound in Waco. Yeah, Waco is a town, obviously. Yeah. But I was thinking,
it's a village. It's almost.
It's a village. It's, and no M. Night Shyamalan to be seen here. But yeah, I thought looking at these photos, I don't know if I want any part of that. I went to a weird private school, and they had this sort of Maypole festivities. Mm-hmm. It's a weird German private school, and they would actually celebrate odd pagan things like this. And I always thought it was kind of bizarre to have a maypole and to run around it and that. And they were doing this in elementary school. And like, I didn't take part, but I always thought, what have my parents gotten me into here? But these people, and I'm talking about the anthropologists and their group of friends, they're introduced into this world in an amazing way through this outstanding cinematography and a very... something that upends your senses, literally, because the camera turns over in several instances, and they're going down this deserted road, and then the camera flips, and it gave me vertigo. Like I had to look away, and I can only imagine what people would have experienced in the cinema when this was happening. Like it made me ill.
Was this before or after Shrooms? I can't recall.
You?
No, they took Shrooms in the movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that would explain it. I was like, I didn't take Shrooms. Holy shit! I can't believe I didn't notice
took Shrooms.
That.
Yeah.
And then they were driving.
Well, not when they were driving. When they first got to the.
I see. Okay.
Don't you remember when she looked at her hand and there was
plants growing out of it.
She was high on shrooms, and
so this group of people is introduced to. I believe Pele.
I could watch this movie on shrooms. But it might
I think
be
I could too.
But I'll say that for what did I learn. But anyway,
This group of people is welcomed, not exactly with open arms by this commune because. They're kept at a distance in a way
but otherwise they're welcoming.
Think to the probably a similar extent to what Swedes themselves would behave like.
Yeah.
Sort of a Nordic, distance, a European distance, and not the warmth you'd experience in, say, I don't know, Peru or Argentina or something. It's a very distant kind of welcome, and they start to experience, you mentioned these odd feelings that are odd, the odd people that are part of this commune, very regimented, very
physically alike, all blonde, all, you know, lacking in facial expressions for the most part, just you know, all dressed in these flowing diaphanous robes. Great word, one of my favorites.
Speaking of just disorienting, another thing that adds to the sort of surreal nature of it all is the perpetual sun. The fact that in this part of Sweden, this time of year, the sun doesn't go down. So it's broad daylight, 24 hours a day, seven days a week. And when the assembled, the group are coming down off their rooms, and one of them says, "What time is it?" And he goes, "Oh, it's like 10 p.m. He goes, "No, that's impossible. Yeah. It's impossible because the sky, the sun is so bright." But yeah.
If only that were the case right here. It's so gloomy with our like 6 hours of sunlight right now.
Yeah, but I don't know if I could deal with 24-hour sunlight either.
Well, luckily it's not very long, right?
Circadian rhythms would get really, really
yeah,
fucked up.
Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah.
And I was thinking like, to the
your rods and cones would be fucked up. Yeah. When he had the Kenny Rogers roasters kicking.
Oh my God.
That was actually Gary imitating Kramer, but anyway.
Do you think that was a debit or a credit? Like, I appreciate the extent to which a movie can generate fears in pure daylight. I think Texas Chainsaw is a prime example of this, but there are others. But
the question is, did this movie generate fears? That's what we have to sort of discuss.
I think it did, but I think this could have really benefited from a good nighttime bonfire as well. Mm. And so I appreciated the fact that this was front end loaded with sun and fears. To the extent that the fears were prolonged, I would probably take umbrage with that, because there's a turning point in this film where I think the debits outweigh the pros, and it was the opposite for the first hour, I would say.
What is your turning point? I guess you would call it the climax of the film, like in the sense there's a literal climax. I don't want to spoil it, but
no, I don't. I think it was more the characterization and my inability to buy into the fact that these people would be friends, specifically the youngest member of their group, who is this guy who seemed like he stepped out of a Judd Apatow film. Who was just making wisecracks, and he ends up offending
Will Poulter character?
I believe so. He ends up offending
Will Poltergeist. Yeah.
Will Poltergeist. He ends up offending, you know, the hosts by urinating on one of their
sacred trees.
Yeah. And this guy, like,
well, he's not long for it after that. That's for sure.
No, he did not fit in with this sober, serious group of academics. And they're I can't buy into certain people hanging out with one another. And he just stood out like a sore thumb to me. Both his wisecracker remarks, but also his behavior, and the fact that he seemed like 5 years their junior, and no PhD student, self-respecting, would be associating with this imbecile. But it's funny to the extent that these guys are invested in their work, because two of them, it turns out, are wanting to study this Swedish subculture.
They want to write dissertations on this subculture.
Yeah, and they go into length
for that.
Yes, and they go into this lengthy discussion of the various meanings of the symbols that are adorn the walls of their structures in this little community, and the runes, on and on with the runes over and over, and they are exposed to these rituals. The runes were ruinous to me, and I thought, like, I mean, the horror genre is renowned for people who don't know when to get out when the going is good. But for God's sake, I mean, these are specialists in this field. And you'd think, and we're going to have to spoil some of it, because there's a specific ritual that takes place that should have had these guys running for the hills.
And again, it's not original. It's been done before in other movies.
Oh, do tell. This particular way of...
Well, not that particular way, but the concept behind it is like sort of like Logan's Run or something, you know?
Oh, yes. I hope I don't have the term wrong, but geronticide?
Is that when you just kill someone named Geronimo or something?
You scream Geronimo while leaping from great heights.
It's from geriatric, obviously. So.
So geronticide, where you have through either by choice or... maybe they've gotten too old to contribute to the group. However way you slice it, these people, it's like the opposite of what the Spartans would have done with children who could not contribute to the state of Sparta back in the day. So like the old ones, I think it's the age of 72.
72.
So yeah. Logan's Run was what?
Like 30. 30? Yeah.
So 72 is when you put yourself out to pasture.
Mm-hmm. They do it willingly.
And this was, I thought, was pretty spectacular. So the two elder states people of the group commit suicide from jumping from these limestone cliffs, mm-hmm. with spectacular results. I mean, I was thinking of a history of violence almost with the half a face. Mm. I was almost thinking some of the violence toward the end of The Witch. Like, this was very intense.
Well, even in Hereditary, from what I recall, the young daughter, she gets smacked face first into a stop sign as a car is speeding.
Ooh, yeah.
And that was how she... Ouch. That was her demise, and I believe it was quite similar in terms of the special effects. So there was a lot of connected thread between this and Hereditary.
Reminds me of Princess Di's demise. Carpal tunnel syndrome. Hey, you gotta admit, that's pretty good, right?
No, I'm not admitting anything. Not at all.
You don't have to admit anything. But that the fact that they were watching this, and I thought how they got out of it was fairly interesting, because there's this cultural split, and the anthropologists lose their dispassionate observer status and go, this is fucking barbaric, why did you not tip us off that people would be committing suicide in front of us? And then the hosts can convince them that this is part of their culture that they've been doing for thousands of years.
One of the people that comes up with him, he is part of the society, and he's always trying, like, no, this is okay, don't worry about it, this is how we do it,
this is how we do it. Yeah, I have to side with the Westerners on this front, because at the very least, they should have been informed that this was going to transpire.
Yeah, and exactly. Then it's like, oh, by the way, something's going to happen between the first course and the second course, you might want to steel yourself, you know, you don't have to spoil it entirely, but at least kind of like just say something's afoot,
and given that this is all voluntary and not someone just plucked from their ranks for cannibalism or something, you'd say that you could probably, not that it's justified, but you could at least understand it as a dispassionate observer.
Well, it is voluntary, but what's interesting is if the plummet doesn't kill you,
a giant mallet wielded
by somebody else. So at that point,
oh my god, yeah, this was death by whack-a-mole, and it might have merited inclusion in our book Death by Umbrella. Mm-hmm. Although we did have a hammer death, so you could throw this under the rubric of a hammered demise. So I mean,
this would be something more akin to what Harley Quinn would be.
Oh my god. And, yeah. This thing, I was wondering when the one gentleman was marching with this thing, like what it was. I said to my partner that they're going to probably ring this giant gong in anticipation of grabbing some elk from the wilderness and cutting its eyes out and force feeding it. That's where my mind was going. I did not know this would be used to crush the skull of one of the elders, and I thought, man, that was badass. At about the midway point of this was when I began to get off the wagon for this one, when you have this internecine battle between these warring academics and whether they should collaborate in their study of this cult commune or whether they should work independently, and the ludicrous nature to which the lengths they go through to find their, you know, they take photographs when they're not supposed to. They do not engage with their research with the hosts at all. They're doing it with such subterfuge and mendacity that I find it ridiculous. Like,
well, they sort of use their friend as an intermediary. There's a bit of a language barrier too, and some of them do speak perfect fluent English, other ones don't. So, but yeah, they are.
But still, I mean, these are people who've brought you into their community. What are you going to start? Like, you can't jeopardize that level of trust and start going rogue. Mm-hmm. But that's when this started to lose me, as their members of their party start getting lost. Yeah, so there's a British couple, one member of whom goes missing, and there's much talk about what happened to him because he's a newlywed, and why would he leave his get up and grab his backpack and go back into the city? Yeah. And so as members of the ranks start to disappear, the silliness starts to get ratcheted up.
Some go rogue and other ones go native, and that sort of wasn't really telegraphed well. It just sort of happened as far as I was concerned, so I'm not going to say who or what have you, but I didn't really buy it.
And it's weird that the anthropologists drive the story, but they're not the ones whose performances were particularly good. There's this Chris Pratt looking guy, and he's kind of, I don't even know the actor's name. He's fairly mediocre.
There's Chidi from The Good Place. You watch The Good Place on Netflix?
I've seen it.
Yeah, that's a great show, by the way. And
Ted Danson.
Ted Danson is dancing his way through a great performance. Yeah, I really like it. He's good on the show. He's good. And it's a great show.
Well, although there's the guy who's running around naked, but he looks like a squat version of Chris Pratt. But yeah, I don't know who he was. But I mean, everything's carried by Florence Pugh, and she's just so amazing. Like, yeah, she's like 5 foot two.
Every time I see her on screen, you know, she has the it factor. Like, yeah. your eyes is totally drawn to her, and she always delivers really good grounded performances.
Yeah, and she's brought into this Maypole, Mayflower type, May Queen elaborate ceremony that we won't, you know, we won't spoil it for people who haven't seen it, but she drives everything, but the, I guess, screenwriters and director unwisely redirect the story away from her to the and follow the folly of these two imbeciles, you know, duking it out over, you know, publish or perish
and their PhD. But then I feel as in the final maybe 15, 20 minutes, it sort of veers back to her. But then you're right, they keep on cutting back and forth to calamities befalling certain characters and whatnot. And I'm not going to get into it for fear of spoiling some of the juiciness near the end.
Juiciness or parchness, to what extent is it one or the other? Like, I was on board for the first hour and I was on the edge of my seat. The visuals were so startling, and the mushrooms notwithstanding, it was so disorienting to go through what the characters were going through, and to the extent that they were gaslit, and the extent to which Pele was involved with the commune as an acolyte and as a friend. He was the intermediary joining the two. He was superb. He was great. Like, he was fantastic, but toward the latter half, I'm not sure I bought into the scare. So they really pumped up the gore toward the end.
They did. And that's, but again, that's the trope that will befall all folk horror. You know that eventually, like, weird shit is going to happen. It usually involves some pagan ritual.
Usually involves some straw effigy.
Some effigy, or maybe an animal or something, or what have you, or something animalistic perhaps. And so you know it's coming, and so it's just a matter of, well, how good is it going to be? To me, nothing beats Edward Woodward being burned alive in the Wicker Man, in the actual edifice of the Wicker Man.
Well, maybe, what about the bone tomahawk, maybe? There's some ritualistic, pagan-esque elements of that, maybe? I'm not sure.
They were Native American, were they?
I believe so. I think that's maybe more of an exemplar, and that's that really brought the gore as well, as it ritualistically just destroyed the explorers in that one. And that was like, that's the film of the year, whenever that came out, 2016. That was just balls to the wall, like, was flawless.
I remember we did a list of the top 10 horror movies of the year for that year. We put it up on the site,
reallyawfulmovies.com.
there you go.
Yeah,
and it was just before they released Bone Tomahawk, so Bone Tomahawk was absent from that list. But had we had seen it, had we just waited,
it would have been top two.
Because we want to get our list out first. We want to be like the first there in it, you know, so we can get the most clicks.
Yeah.
And if we would have waited maybe another week or two, it would have been boom, would have rocketed to the top with a bullet. So,
Well, it's tough. I feel like the narrative investment I had was not the same as the sole observer, to the extent that the Wicker Man was. Like, I felt like the insider-outsider dynamic was better explored through that, and this one, well done until that part sort of dissolved.
And that's all, because Edward Woodward was such an outsider in this sense. Like, everything he saw appalled him. Like, there was absolutely no sort of like acceptance of this, because this will make good a cool thing, a little chapter for my dissertation. No, like, that was, you know, the Wicker Man is just,
he had no diplomatic force like Pele welcoming him into the world. He was just a detective observer, and he was just detached in that way. So you can't put them in the same, mention them in the same breath.
Although people are, just because of the fact that they're in the same sort of subgenre of horror called folk horror. So,
yeah, I feel like this was a new twist, to the extent that it wasn't a Lost in the Woods movie where people meet this group. So it was people, the extent they were welcomed in. And I think that's what makes it stand alone. I mean, it's highly original. Like, Ari Aster, I think he's got, I don't want to call them failures, but these are two
Ambitious failures.
Ambitious,
Hereditary.
Hereditary, I My biggest issue was with the pacing after the daughter's demise.
Yeah, and the ending.
Because that was so explosive.
Yeah, the ending, it was weird. And it didn't really follow what came beforehand.
And I was going to give a shout out to Gabriel Byrne, who I was just totally on board with.
Hasn't really made much sense, has he? I haven't seen anything.
No, but he's always just a strong presence, and his relationship with the son was really incredible as the family unit dissolves with the death of the daughter. And I thought, man, their dynamic was so good. Yeah. There's just such a character-driven, like, dramatic masterpiece. And
he's able to coax good performances out of his actors, because there were a couple good performances in this one. Not everybody acquitted themselves that well. Will Poulter was, like you said,
The one serious academic, Josh, as they said in Swedish, but mm-hmm. Josh, the black guy, he was like
TV from The Good Place. Yeah,
yeah, he was peppering them with questions about their group, and he's very knowledgeable about their particular practices, and he's just dismissed outright and treated like so shabbily by these guys. But his character was not developed whatsoever compared with the others, who get love interests, who get backstories, even the two Brits who are just basically thrown in there as an afterthought almost, because we don't meet them in the beginning. They are so much more involved, and he just sort of gets left to question little tiny practices. What does this thing mean? What does this thing mean? And when you're doing this, what does this mean? And so there's really nothing left. There's nothing developed there.
Speaking of not really developed, I mean, one of the iconic images of this movie that, you know, they had in a lot of posters and stuff was the deformed denizen of the island.
Yeah.
And they really didn't do anything at all with that character other than to show the face every now and again to unsell the audience. And that was a bit of a lost opportunity.
It was an afterthought completely, because one of the characters mentioned how they choose their seers or the soothsayers through a process of inbreeding, not explained.
And she wasn't, or he, or whatever this character, whatever the gender was.
Which I didn't buy as a conceit for that kind of group. A group that seemed so cohesive and sophisticated. I would buy it with the likes of The Ritual or The Hills Have Eyes type people. But these people were just so almost worldly and reserved and multilingual and coherent. It didn't make any sense for them to be like that. I mean, it could happen, I don't know, but it just seemed very impractical and not very particularly, like, didn't have that Northern European practicality.
A cool character nonetheless, individually, but not much done with it, so.
Yeah, so I guess, is this the point where in the podcast where we get to what we've learned from Midsommar?
This would be the 72-year mark where we're about to jump off the cliff.
Oh my God, yeah.
So, what did I learn also with that? Well, this is not a short movie by any means. It's a lengthy movie. It's about 2.5 hours. Some might say it's a languid film, and it goes, sort of takes its time to get where it has to go. But there's a longer cut in existence. There's a director's cut, and that tacks on another half hour of gore. This movie originally received an X rating from the MPAA, and Ari Aster had to excise 30 minutes in order to get the coveted R rating. I think they released after this movie came out. It came out in midsummer. It came out in the summertime.
Makes sense. Yeah.
Maybe a couple of weeks later, they did release the director's cut as an unrated version of the film. But I really want to get my hands on that and see that, and see if the added gore is there for the sake of the gore, if it actually does, flesh out the story some more. So what I learned is that, for a very long film, well, at least with the short attention spans that we have nowadays, movies are just getting longer and longer and longer. I've been binging a bit on movies that I've missed over the last few months, and not one is less than 2 hours. I don't know what, and most of them go towards 2.5 hours. I don't know, whatever happened to the good old 90 minutes comedy? They're just a thing of the past now. But
comedy? I was going to say, my God, the aforementioned Judd Apatow and
he's like the best. You know? Might as well be making 1900 5-hour-long movies.
Oh,
but,
my God.
But I am interested in checking out the 3-hour director's cut. So, Ari Aster, if you're listening, which I doubt you are, maybe you want to send me a copy of that. That would be fun. That'd be interesting.
And speaking of Mr. Aster, he cited Repulsion and The Thing as two of his favorites.
Oh, okay.
Which is really interesting because these are two of my favorites as well. As big on The Thing as you are, but I'm more of a Repulsion guy. Yeah. But you can't help but put both of those in your top 30. Top 50, God knows, it's listicle things. Like, when you love horror as much as we do, I don't even know if I could do a top 30. I would have to subdivide these into their respective subgenre categories, like folk, and I would have to do a top 10 for each subgenre. I mean, this is such a beloved, Genre.
It would be tough. I could do a top five because I've been honing that for quite a while.
A top five all time?
My favorite, but I'm not going to...
Okay. If it's favorite, again, if you dispense with quality, then I'm going to throw Demons in my top five. But by no means is Umberto Bava's, heavy metal-infused gore fest in any way a piece of filmmaking quality. Let's be sure. But man, do I love that movie. Another thing I learned is that this was, I don't think, filmed in Sweden. If I'm not mistaken, this was Hungary.
Yes.
So it's kind of weird
that... My homeland.
Indeed it is. A beautiful country. And that didn't take me away from it. In my mind, I was in Sweden. So there are certain circumstances where
you were eating your IKEA meatballs.
Yeah, you're being taken to Eastern Europe for budget purposes, to go film shit on the cheap. Yeah. And this, I was totally on board with everything about this, and in terms of the scenery. So setting horror is so imbued with sense of place, and the successful ones have that place, whether it's Camp Crystal Lake or the incredible Massachusetts starkness of the witch. And pre-settlement, pre-United States existence, pre-constitution, pre-whatever. Yep. So first hour, I'm totally, again, enraptured by this. And the last 15 minutes, I'm on board as well. A lull toward the latter third. So I'm hesitant to give it as high as it should had there been some of these elements cut out. I'm going to give it a solid 3.5. And man, is horror in good hands these days? Like, people malign the genre all the time and that, but there's constantly, whether it's Jordan Peele or these types of guys, infusing it with this surfeit of energy that it hasn't seen in a while. Like, from 2015 to now, we are just in we are in a revitalization after the early 2000s dismal proceedings that the likes of Saw and Hostel wrought. So that was a very, I would say, 8 years of just, humdrum, crappy, releases. And now we just got to sit back and enjoy what's coming. Mm-hmm. I saw the preview for this. Oh, what was it? It might have been maybe during a screening of It. I want to say it's It. I don't know, but I turned to my girlfriend and said, "Whoa, man, this is something. I'm seeing this. I have to see this. I'm on board." So Ari Aster, good for you, man. This is, I think, Danny DeVito of all people's production house that put this out. Mm-hmm. If he's got more on board, I don't see why he won't be doing more, because this man has earned $150 million with his last two, if not $100 million. These are both box office smashes, both this and Hereditary, and I would say mostly well-deserved. Mm-hmm. So, man.
Okay, well, you gave it 3 stars. I'm going
Three and a half.
I'm going lower than you by a full star. I'm giving it 2.5 stars.
Oh, wow.
Just in the sense that everything that was supposed to shock us, I knew was going to come. And I'm not saying it's because I'm such a smart viewer. It's just, I've been there. I've been down this road. I've seen it. I could have predicted that the death of the elders. I could have predicted all the crazy shit near the end, because...
Well, it's telegraphed in the poster. We know what's coming. I thought they didn't particularly handle the bear well, in the extent that...
That was wicked, though, because that was a cool homage, as far as I was concerned, to the Wicker Man remake and Nicolas Cage in the bear suit.
Oh, my God. I was going to say, if you want to see an awesome bear movie, Backcountry, which we podcasted, is a fantastic killer animal movie.
That's
the two hikers lost in Ontario.
Oh, right.
We don't want to spoil the bear, but...
Well, Grizzly. That's one of the granddaddy of them all.
Right? Yeah, for sure. That was more Ursa Minor than Ursa Major, I would say. But, they could have done more with the bear, but I thought it was a pretty neat conceit, and I didn't necessarily see that one coming. But let's say if this were two... This is 2.5 hours. Coming. If this were two hours, mm-hmm. I would give it a full 4. But, there's lagging components. There are underdeveloped characters. There was... I think it could have benefited from a nighttime scare and some good ritual around the campfire. I'm always up for a good fire scare at night, when people the flames and the smoke and the flickering off the faces. I think that's just a dynamite thing to film. And if it's done really well, it can succeed. So,
2.5 for me once again. I with the admission that I really did enjoy it. It was 2.5 hours well spent, as far as I was concerned.
Well, I think maybe a three then for you.
No, it's because of the existence of this director's cut. Because I know that there's something out there that's 30 minutes longer.
There's something out there,
and it's gorier, and it's tapping my window right now. You know, with a hook for a hand. Because of that, I want to see that, and I think that's going to give me like get up to the 3.5 mark as far as I'm concerned. So this version of Midsommar, I'm sticking with the 2.5.
Excellent.
And this is from someone who just like, much to other people's consternation, like I lauded Hereditary and I said, yeah, one of the best horrors of the year. And I'm like, ah, shit, it sucks. It's this, it's sad, it's crap, it's blah, blah, blah. Because it ended ambiguously and so on.
But yeah, that's fine, yeah.
That I gave 4 stars to. But this one is a bit of a sophomore slump. Just a wee bit.
No, see, I would give Hereditary 3. But I could be convinced if I think they both demand repeat viewings, mm-hmm. and I could flip my ratings between the two, because I think, strangely, Hereditary had fewer debits, but I didn't enjoy it as much. So I could go either way. I could give this one 3, and you could argue me into a 3.5 for Hereditary. I could go either way. Be that as it may, you know, the man with the alliterative first and last name there, like, keep him coming, buddy. Like, yeah. this is just, you know, another, like, great voice and another great, you know, auteur in the space. So, and we hope you guys continue to listen to our show. We're going to bring you lots of, you know, engaging horror and action discussions in the new year.
Well,
and,
that's a, you know, again, like we touch on every genre. And
we've got a great Animal Attack movie in the works that we're going to be discussing.
Yep, and I'm looking for, I saw Cats in the theater and I'm dying for you to see it because I just want to eviscerate that film on the podcast one of these days.
We do
musicals. Yeah.
I've made no bones about my just antipathy toward the horrendous music of Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Oh, it's garbage.
He is such a complete fucking hack.
Yeah.
And
the movie is garbage. Oh, my God. We got to discuss it. So.
The extent to which a composer like John Williams will, I don't want to say he's inspired by, he apes Beethoven and he rips off all these great classical composers. Man, Andrew Lloyd Webber is just, oh, God. He's not even I don't know what he is. Memories is one of the worst pieces of music ever written. Like, it's up there with Who Let the Dogs Out. It's up there with any of the oeuvre produced by Hootie and the Blowfish or Hootie solo.
Hootie produced stuff?
Hootie and the Blowfish.
He produced.
Not behind the boards Dr. Dre, but I mean, God, like, Memories, it's just gives me the willies.
Produced by Darius Rucker.
Darius Rucker, oh my God. Yeah. So, you know, let's lay it out right here. A Cats podcast is forthcoming, right?
We will
be attacking that animal, but an Animal Attack movie is coming very soon.
You never know what's going to come every Friday when you open up your podcatcher and see what the latest episode of the Really Awful Movies podcast is.
Indeed.
Could be horror, could be musical, could be a horrific musical, who the hell knows. But favorite. Hopefully it's an enjoyable listen. That's all we can ask for.
Exactly.
It's an enjoyable discussion that we have. I enjoy discussing it with you, and hopefully
I, to a certain extent, enjoy them with you. But yeah.
Yeah, well,
yeah, there you go.
And I hope that enjoyment translates to the audience and they enjoy listening to our discussions. And that's that. So having said that, I want to wish everybody an extremely prosperous, happy, and healthy 2020. This is our first show of the new year.
Yes.
Of the new decade.
Yeah.
Wow. We've now traversed 2 decades.
Oh, don't make me feel older than I already am. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care. Thank you.